Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. ID the Future has followed the progress of an academic freedom bill in Tennessee, which recently passed by an overwhelming bipartisan majority vote. The strength of the vote has not protected it from critics who claim it's not an academic freedom bill, but the proverbial camel's nose under the tent in order to teach creationism, pseudoscience, or non-science. But what is it really, and why didn't the governor sign the bill that had such popular support? Here to talk about it with me is the Discovery Institute's Casey Luskin. Casey, Tennessee finally passed its new academic freedom law, and this has a lot of critics screaming that it's undermining science, that it's going to encourage the teaching of creation. What is it exactly that Tennessee really passed?
Well, Tennessee passed an academic freedom law, which gives teachers the right to choose to talk about both the scientific strengths and scientific weaknesses of controversial scientific theories without having to worry about being fired from their jobs.
And when this bill passed, it passed without the signature of Governor Bill Haslam. Describe how that worked out.
Well, in Tennessee, there are two ways that a bill can become a law when it comes to the governor. The governor can sign the law, or the governor can just do nothing and not sign the law, and then it automatically becomes law. In this case, the governor decided not to sign the law. We noticed that he put out a statement where it seemed like he had unfortunately believed some of the false claims about the Tennessee academic freedom law, which were being put out by the Darwin lobby.
Hold on right there. Let me share the actual statement for listeners here, because I happen to have a copy of it in front of me. He wrote, "I have reviewed the final language of House Bill 368, Senate Bill 893, and assessed the legislation's impact. I have also evaluated the concerns that have been raised by the bill. I do not believe that this legislation changes the scientific standards that are taught in our schools or the curriculum that is used by our teachers. However, I also don't believe that it accomplishes anything that isn't already acceptable in our schools. The bill received strong bipartisan support, passing the House and Senate by a 3-to-1 margin, but good legislation should bring clarity and not confusion. My concern is that this bill has not met this objective. For that reason, I will not sign the bill, but will allow it to become law without my signature." So where did the governor buy into the Darwin lobby?
Well, the governor claimed that there was no need for the bill, that it didn't accomplish anything, and it didn't change anything that wasn't already acceptable. And this is a talking point that's been put out by a lot of evolution lobbyists who have said, well, critical thinking is already encouraged by the state science standards. Why isn't that enough? Well, I'll tell you why that's not enough. We work on this issue on a national level, and we're very acutely aware of the fact that there have been a number of incidents around the country where teachers have been disciplined or fired or transferred into teaching PE because they've talked about scientific weaknesses in evolution. So even though there might be on paper at least some claim that teachers ought to be using critical thinking in some very general sense, when the rubber hits the road, many teachers don't really have those kinds of freedoms. And so an academic freedom law like this is necessary to give teachers the confidence that they can talk about the evidence for and against controversial scientific theories without having to worry about losing their jobs. So really what's going on here is there's sort of a climate of fear and intimidation that permeates public education today. And we were made aware of this in 2008 when Louisiana passed a different academic freedom law. And a survey in Louisiana found that over 50% of teachers there felt intimidated regarding teaching the controversy surrounding origins, and they were unsure of their rights and what they could and could not do when it came to teaching these kinds of controversial topics. An academic freedom law helps to clarify what the rights of teachers are, and it gives them the confidence that they can, in fact, use critical thinking when talking about these subjects without having to worry about getting a letter in the mail the next week that they're not going to be teaching anymore. So this is a way of basically ensuring that teachers have the confidence that they can do this and restoring academic freedom to the classroom.
Casey, there's been a strong reaction from critics of this bill with its passing. I know you've appeared in a number of different media outlets with critics of this bill who are claiming that it was encouraging the teaching of creationism, pseudoscience, or non-science. How did you respond to those challenges?
Well, the response is pretty simple, David. You just look at the text of the bill. The bill states that it only protects the teaching of scientific information and shall not be construed in any way to allow the promotion of any religious doctrine. That's almost a direct paraphrase or direct statement from what the bill says. So the bill makes it very clear that teaching religion or teaching creationism or teaching non-science is not protected by the bill. The bill only protects the teaching of science. So I agree with the critics that we don't want to be bringing religion or creationism into the science classroom, and this bill does not allow that. So all you have to do is look at the text of the bill to see that. And of course, what's really going on here is these critics don't like the fact that the bill allows teachers to talk about scientific weaknesses in evolution, and they want to censor those by relabeling them as religion in order to have them banned from the classroom. And so that's sort of the tactic that's going on there.
You pointed out in your posting on evolutionnews.org that the talking points of the critics, ironically, showed exactly why the law was needed. Describe that.
That's exactly right. I mean, imagine every time that you tell a teacher, well, if you talk about weaknesses in evolution, then you're bringing religion or creationism or non-science or pseudoscience into the classroom. Well, teachers are going to be scared about whether or not they can talk about this issue freely. They're going to be scared into silence when it comes to teaching scientific criticisms of evolution. The rhetoric of the critics is intended to intimidate teachers into silence, and that shows exactly why an academic freedom bill is needed in order to give teachers the freedom to talk about the evidence for and against evolution in the classroom, and to also restore their confidence that they can teach legitimate scientific critiques of evolution in the classroom without getting into trouble.
If a teacher does try to teach some kind of religion or pseudoscience or non-science, they're probably going to get a big headline in Tennessee because critics will point and say, see what happens, see what happens. But what would you expect to happen if a teacher were to try to do that kind of thing?
Well, if a teacher were to teach some kind of religious viewpoint in the classroom and advocate religion, they would not be protected by this bill. As we talked about, the bill has express language that makes it clear that it only protects the teaching of science, and it does not protect the teaching of religion. So if a teacher were to teach religion, they simply would not come under the protection of the bill, and they would be subject to all the other federal case law and state laws which prohibit the government from advocating religion in public schools. So this law does nothing to change all of the law in this country, which says that public schools cannot establish a religious viewpoint. It simply says that teaching scientific critique of evolution does not establish a religious viewpoint. And in fact, that's a legitimate scientific topic that teachers can cover in the classroom without having to worry about getting fired or something like that. So again, this bill does not change current law. All it does is it says that teachers can talk about legitimate scientific critiques of evolution without having to worry about losing their jobs.
Are there any other states that you're aware of who've seen what Tennessee has done here with academic freedom who plan on launching the same kind of efforts in their state?
Well, specific states, I'm actually not aware of any right now because the legislative session is just about over, and most of the bills that had been submitted for this session are pretty much either passed or they haven't passed. So I have no doubt, though, that next year we're going to see more academic freedom bills. Over the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen a number of academic freedom bills every single year, and I anticipate that next year we'll see people being encouraged by what happened in Tennessee to submit academic freedom bills in additional states. So while I don't have a crystal ball and I don't know exactly what states might have academic freedom bills next year right now, there's no question in my mind, based upon recent experience, that that is going to happen.
Any other thoughts on the passage of this academic freedom bill that you'd like to add?
Well, this year we've seen the standard talking points that we always hear from critics, that the bill would bring religion into the classroom, that the bill would somehow harm student learning. And I just think that these talking points are non-credible. The idea that somehow this bill is going to harm science education is really quite difficult to take seriously. Leading science education theorists across the board say that the best way to teach science is to teach students about the evidence for and against particular scientific topics. And that's all that this law is encouraging teachers to do. It's encouraging teachers to teach students about both sides, let students wrestle with the data, learn critical thinking skills, and form their own opinions. And that's exactly what science education theorists say is the best way to teach science. So I think there's no question this law is going to improve science education. Another one of the common talking points we've heard this year is the claim that somehow this bill is going to harm the economic state of Tennessee. And that's also really difficult to take seriously. In Louisiana, the one state that actually has passed an academic freedom bill into law, their economy has been thriving over the last few years. In fact, they won an award from Business Facilities Magazine about a year and a half ago, which said that their high-tech industry was one of the best in the nation and that their economy was actually doing quite well when the rest of the country's economy was really not doing so well. So it's clear that the academic freedom bill in Louisiana did not have an adverse effect on the economy, and I think that folks can expect that in Tennessee the exact same thing is going to happen. I can't see any reason why allowing students to think critically about controversial scientific topics is somehow going to harm the economy. I think that's just a non-credible argument. So this is another one of those years where we've seen the same kind of very weak and non-credible opposition to these academic freedom bills. And I'm just very pleased that in Tennessee, the legislature was brave enough to think for themselves and do the right thing for students and teachers in that state.
Yeah, kids are supposed to learn at a very early age. You're not supposed to make those kinds of sky is falling warnings too often, or it comes back to bite you. And hopefully critics will maybe revisit that old children's book and learn the lesson again. Casey Luskin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That concludes this edition of ID the Future. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to support the Center for Science and Culture, please go to idthefuture.com and press the yellow donate button. This podcast is copyright 2012, the Discovery Institute. All rights reserved.